I want to speak tonight about a topic in chinuch. It's a have the right attitude. I want to touch on the topic of kilkel acherim, and I want to touch on this topic of what happens when you have talmidim who are not roy capable, and how do you deal with them? Reduce your standards, you're given a curriculum, and so on and so forth. I know whatever I say, everyone's going to write the topic anything he wants, but I think that's going to be the topic. Okay? So I want to start with a one chazal, which is very dear to me. I'm pretty sure I heard this first from Rabbi Lubin 20 years ago. Pretty sure. It's a word from Rabbi Zion Brook, and I've used it sparingly. I think it's based on a Medrash Rabbah, and the pasuk says that after, after Esav went ahead and married these women from, where were they from? Yeah. It says, "Vayikach ishes Yehudas basberi achiti vesbasnas baitenu achiti vechitim." So it's the pasuk says about Tiena Moras Ruach liYitzchak Rivka. And it was a tremendous pain. There was anguish. Yitzchak Rivka. It's like your son went ahead and married two, you know, Gaish women, so to speak. So the Medrash says, it's brought down by the Chizkuni, that why does the pasuk say Yitzchak first? So a high school kid would answer, because if it said Rivka first, you'd ask why did it say Rivka first? But we already know that that's not a good teretz. There's a reason why it says Yitzchak first. And the Medrash says, because it bothered Yitzchak more than it bothered Rivka. Why did it bother Yitzchak more than it bothered Rivka? That Esav married these Benos Achiti, because Rivka was a Bas of Avodah Zarah, and Yitzchak was a Ben Kadosh. Yitzchak was Ben Avram, and Rivka was Bas Lavan, Bas Psuel, and he was over the Avodah Zarah. So Mela, it bothered Yitzchak more. That's why it says that when Asa went ahead and married Bas Achiti, Bnos Achiti, Yitzchak was more pained than Rivka. So Brooke said this amazing to her. Okay, first of all, Rivka denounced her father's teachings. She denounced it because she'd married Yitzchak. She was right. She was on the level of Chesed and Nevuah. Was Rivka. So what do you mean she was a boss of Avodah Zarah? She wasn't embracing her father's, Baruch Hashem, she was not mushba from her father. She denounced her father. Number two, even if you want to say she learned something from her father, she was 3 years old. She was only 3 years old. How much could she have learned? And at this point, okay, I don't remember this anymore, but I vaguely remember once upon a time when I looked into this shmooze, she was 63 right now. They were married 60 years. I don't know if that's true. How old was Esav now? I don't know. So I know you look it up, but I just remember Doc Tzachmir that it was like 60 years later. So even if she had something at 3 years old, 60 years later is a long time for someone to be a Baal Shtuva, and you're still going to say she doesn't really care about both the Zara. That's like the basics. Not like you're talking about some type of chumrah, you know, not carrying in a way kamalus and on Shabbos or waiting in Rabbeinu Tam. Like you're talking about Rivki Menu. She was one of the most. She was Zoha to give birth to Yaakov. So anyway, so Rabbi Zion Brook says, you see from here that despite all that, it did make a roshan. So I think the first thing, and I don't like to spend the 25 and talk on the Chazal, but I think we have to start with the concept of Hashpah makes a very, very big difference. So, if you're the Rebbe of a class, you're the counselor of a bunk, the Hashpah that permeates has to be, have to worry about it. I have a chaver who I didn't bump into, but I just bumped into someone last Shabbos who works in the same yeshiva he works in. Okay, makes a difference which yeshiva. He didn't learn Chabad Chaim. A real chashuva person. And he works in the same place. He teaches first grade in one of the big name yeshivas in New York. And he told me that this Rebbe, you would go there, and he's teaching for 35, 40 years. He says he's the only Rebbe, not only during recess is the only Rebbe not on his phone, but not only he's there with the kids, but he's cheering them on. He's like, when a kid scores a goal in soccer, he's cheering, yay, you got a goal. He's so excited for them. So these types of things create an environment, a geschmack for the kids to want to do the right things. If we just wait for the kids to do the wrong things, yeah, you'll see. Miva miyahochem. You'll see some kids are going to do that, some kids are going to do that. We just had an interesting conversation today. I know it's really not appropriate to say it over, but they make the best things to say over. But the subject came up, like, during Mincha, what should we... There's so much noise going on outside the Beis Medrash. So someone suggested that maybe we should tell the high school that they're not allowed to be in that room during Mincha. So I said that it's true, like Ray Blair Daven Mincha there, but what's gonna, if we ask them not to Daven Mincha, not to be there, so what are they gonna do? So Bishlama, if they're okay, they'll go use the gym. They'll go use something else. There's one basketball court, and it's probably hot. They don't want to go, so they're not going to go. So where do they go? They're going to just, like, curse. Like, they wait the 12 minutes till we finish Mincha. They'll be standing outside the doors. Someone's going to have to go. So it could cause a kilkel. So I said, I don't think we'll be helping the situation. They could be playing cat and mouse. They'll come in. They're going to start yelling and run away. I could see that it not helping the situation. Yeah, anyone who's sensitive, really, they on their own should be very careful. But if they're not, I don't think it's one of those things, like if you were trying to force it on them, lav dafka. You know, so you have to create an environment, you have to create a competition, you have to create an excitement, this hockey game, and go, yeah, if they do something for them, maybe it could come up in a different way, but just, I was afraid just to tell them not to be there. It's not like I don't care about the mincha. I do care about the mincha, but I don't even think it's going to work to do that. They'll come in anyway, and then they'll have resentment because we're telling them they can't use their thing because we're not a mincha. So I said maybe we should, basically, I should go to the auditorium for mincha because it's a closed room, there's no one around. So maybe we should do that for mincha. I don't know. Other issues didn't think that was a good idea. Because we'll lose people. People say, I didn't know what Mincha was, therefore I didn't come the afternoon Seder. You know? So, okay, so that's the first thing. It's the job of the Rebbe to create an Avira for the Talmidim. It's the job of a counselor in camp to create the Avira. I remember one year I was a counselor. It was a fifth year counselor. So I was already seasoned. I did it for 5 years. So I came up with this idea that I told the, my friend, this summer I'm going to create an Avira in the bunk that's going to be amazing. I'm going to turn the bunk into a mini Beis Medrash. And I bought Sfarim, Shnayas, Chumashim. And my friends told me, you should tell the administration, make sure they put the good kids in there. It says it's not going to make a difference who they put in there. It will not make one difference who they put into the bunk. I'm not telling any of them. So I told them when they came the first day, I told them that there was a lottery, and I don't know what Swiss you guys had to get into this bunk, but this bunk is, this is what we're doing. I had a whole chart, the magic of bunk Chaf Aleph, I remember. I remember a few kids that were in that bunk. I said, this, we're gonna win the Mishnayot. They had a big Mishnayot Baal Peh program. We're gonna wipe out. We're gonna do twice as much as any other bunk. It'll be double. So when they have the auction of what they could buy, we can buy everything. We can buy everything. Okay, don't tell anyone how much we're learning. It's gonna be our secret. When it comes time for the auction, you could use your Mishnayos. But since nobody knows, we're gonna outbid everyone for everything. So they were all pumped by that. And we made a 15-minute Seder right before lunch. And we made a 10-minute Seder right before they went to sleep. And constantly we find extra time. It was all like this hype. I was feeding them, you know, what we have time, guys, just make sure you don't tell anyone. We're running, but don't tell anyone until the last day of camp when they have the auction. For the bank, we're going to buy everything. They were so pumped. They did thousands and thousands of Mishnayos Baal Peh that summer, just because the first of all, I should have done it for 5 years before that. You can get the kids to do almost anything if they believe they could do it. I told them they won the lottery. I think they did. They won the lottery because, you know, how'd they end up in my bunk? You know, I had this plan beforehand, so I didn't ask them. I didn't say who was going to come into the bunk. So a person can create an avira in anything. You can create an avira and convince them they could do it. I remember my math teacher in ninth grade. I was in the dummy math class, and after the first day, the math teacher said, you know, I just saw some of your work today. Like, I don't know how you ended up, you guys, and I think you guys, some of you guys end up in the wrong class. You should be able to be in the higher class. You know, guys, if you want, I we won't tell the principal. And he did the same thing. I'll let you guys take the regents. I bet you'll even outscore the guys in the other class. So if you're in, I will, if you're in and you'll work, I will help you get there. So of course we all raise our hand. We don't be the dummy class. We're gonna show them that we're smarter. I think everyone in my class got between 95 and 100 on the algebra region. And this is the old days when it was still somewhat of a test. You know, it was still somewhat, you needed some intelligence to pass test. Later years, they printed the answers on the front page of the New York Post the day before the test. You know, but that was amazing. We were all excited to jump on the bandwagon and do it. Okay, this I said over on Shabbos, but I don't think anyone's here that heard that. So okay, it's a very good sign. I just wanted to say this one other word. So this one other word I saw for Moshe, I said, I'm going to say it over the next minute, Vlad. When Parshas told us that Moshe had, I've said this over in the high school, I remember saying it in high school, so anyway, high school graduates, this is, Esav said, "Hine anochi holech lamas, v'lama zeli b'chora." Esav said, "Yeah, what do I need this b'chora for?" Because Yaakov told him that you have to do the avoda, and you do the avoda if you have to do it right. If you make one mistake, you be chayav misa. So Esav figured, for sure, I'll be chayav misa. I'm gonna do it wrong. So Rabbi Moshe asked, "So if he knew he was gonna do it wrong, so what did he do so terrible? By refusing the Bechorah, Yaakov would do a much better job." That was his kasher. Just in short, I mean, I could schlep this out to a 30-minute shmooze, but I don't want to say a shmooze. I just want to say a part. So the teretz is that if Esav wanted to, he could have done it. In a comedy, where he was holding right that second, he wasn't holding. But if a person wants to ascend, he wants to move up a notch, he could do it. Koshkin, if the Rebbe is helping them, Vada, he had to have the asaga. If you have a asaga, you could do it. So a person could just move up a notch. So, you know, the Rebbe that what I did with the council with that bunk, there was some, you know, pretty disabled, dysfunctional kids in that bunk. I mean, I remember when they were walking off the bus, I said, ooh. I remember but you have to keep a straight face, and you have to believe in the concept that if a kid believes he could do it, he will be able to do it. What?
The bunk went all the options?
Everything. They wiped out everyone. They bought everything. And then the camp said, like, it's not fair, you know, no fair. I said, well, what's not fair? This is, you said, it's an auction, they're buying. You know, you didn't hand in your things. I said, you didn't ask me to hand in anything. You know, we handed it in the last day. You know, so that's what I did. I was a little dirty pool, but we win. We bought everything. Everything on that thing.
We gave everything?
We bought, they gave us everything. We won everything. Everything on that list, we bought. And it wasn't so much the things on there were so amazing. One of the things on there was that we get to walk Rabbi Sachs to shul Friday night. They weren't all food, you know, or money. But there were also a lot of hush of things. You know, the camp didn't have any money. They put things on that were, you know, the group that's going to walk Rabbi Sachs to shul from his bungalow to the shul. That went for a lot of money. All these hush of the things, you know. That's another thing. I know the nowadays they're giving cash awards and all these things. You really don't need to do it. There are other things you could do that the kids will appreciate much, much more. Because like you give last year, like they were giving out that. I remember one Chazara thing they were. Over one of the young children, like $2 for an Amud. I couldn't even say it to the kids. $2 for an Amud. My guy's not doing anything, but $2 for an Amud. So the times changed, $2. Like, it's got to be like 20, you know, like $2 for an Amud.
How much was $2 worth back then?
I don't know, $2. Nowadays, well, I'm not. For $2, I mean, unfortunately, things became out of hand, so the money doesn't mean anything. So you have to come up, when we end up going back to the hush of the things, they'll be worth more. What people give to yeshiva, people give tremendous monies to yeshiva to put their name on the yeshiva. That's, you know, it's true. It's a very big, it's a big schus for a lot of people, you know, to get that, to coin that. And that really is, believing in a kid is a many thing. I did... one thing last week, I've done it every year, but the boys here in my share know it's not so hard to do. I told the guys that they're going to have to prepare a Torah Chabura on the Sugya. Now, a Torah Chabura to a seasoned Beis Medrash fellow, someone in Kolo, so he's preparing the whole Sugya, the Gemara Rashi Tosfos, the Mishorim Achronim, come up with some Machlokas, the two Mishorim, trying to figure out what the Hezber is, find the Rosh Yeshiva that says it, ask Akasha on something, and then try and say your own pshat, that will answer it. It has to be a developed sugya. Okay, but for a boy in high school, I told them they have to find one Maram Makom that we didn't do. We do some Maram Makom, Maram, you know, it's usually just pshat oriented. They have to find one Maram Makom that we didn't do in Shir, and say it over, make copies, read it, the whole shiur and say it over outside what he says, the kasha, the answer. So it was like, and like when I gave it the first day, they were like it's like what Moshe Eich is, I kid, maybe I can't even read the art scroll, how am I supposed to do this? I said, I'll translate, any base manager guy, you probably some guys, I told them every base manager guy is obligated to help you, but they were too embarrassed to ask anyone. They just didn't feel comfortable asking us. They felt like they, and I did this. I did it at the end of a sugya after we finished. They knew the Gemara Ashitos was pretty cold. Then they had to pick up Marmukum. So we went to the shelf and we opened up like 20 Svarim, and I found, you know, something that was like a paragraph or so. One guy I told him, I gave him a Sonas Pasim on the sugya. What was that sugya?
There's like
that rush. So I just gave him a small Ksonas Pasim. But in order to do the Ksonas Pasim, he had to do the Rush, he had to do the Mugi Yosef, He had to do the Mugiyot's kasha in the Rush and the Teretz. So the Possum's kasha and the answer. So I told each one of them when they hit a brick wall, I said, yes, this is hard. It's hard. If you want to do it, I will help you figure this out and you will do it. If you want to do it, if you want to try and find something else, you could. But you could do this. I will help you. And each one of them, not one person backed off what they originally chose. And each one of them did it. One guy didn't do it because he said he can't do it up until the day of. So I'm just letting you know. If you don't do it, then I have to give you a zero. Because I wasn't planning on grading it. If you present it, you get full credit. But if you don't do it, now you're in a heap. So you have no reason. You have to do it. And they just sometimes they're not used to thinking on their own. They have to figure out the kasha and teretz. It's like a new exercise that they never had to do before by themselves. So every one of them did it. You know, some of them to the last thing that'd be held against the wall with the thought of when it's your turn, you get up and say, I didn't do it. And you maybe be the only one who didn't do it. And that is the art. The hechruch, you know, is to do it, giving kids the feeling that they could do it. And I mentioned the issue of the, just to tie the two things together, very often the kilkel factor is just going to ruminate. If the counselor, whichever situation you're talking about, doesn't create the environment, then there's going to be terrible kilkel. It's not like, oh, if you don't do this, okay, so you just go back, just do regular. So regular is terrible because they're not motivated on their own to do it. Kids in camp, who knows what they'll speak about at night. I got the kids learning, you know, coming back from activities to learn, to go to lunch, and they were learning at night, and that in itself is a tremendous hashpa. What do you think those kids wrote about when they wrote home? Well, what do you think they, those days they used to write letters? Okay. It's a thing that you take a pen and a... And what do you think they wrote about? They talked about what was happening, I'm positive. They talked about, because it really was happening. And they went, we're going to win the Mice Mouth Bear auction, and we're not telling anyone. That you have to create it. It's sometimes a little artificial. You have to create it. But the alternative is, it would be terrible kilkel. Unfortunately, you know, kids are mushba terribly from the youngest ages now. Someone told me that there was a birthday party, a parent told me, and the third grade girl went over to the host house mother and asked what her Wi-Fi password was, because they want to just get on.
Oh my gosh.
That means they have a pass. That means they have a smartphone. And it also means that they know to ask the whole. I wouldn't know to ask that. I mean, why is my phone working?
At least the phone didn't have data.
I don't know what it had, but you know, just the hair. You know, it's a very, very scary world out there. So kilkel. If you throw a kid out who was makalka another kid, there'd probably be no one left in school. Period. Anywhere. But at the same time, it's the yeshiva is being ravaged by, you know, everyone judging everyone, and it's like it's terrible right now. It's terrible. Everyone doesn't want their kid to be with that kid, or what's happening? We had this open house last night, and you know, it was like a really amazing. Presentation, but you know, someone told me did they speak about the Chashivas HaTaira enough? Was that point brought out enough? Like they could count how many times the word Torah was said, and you know, what's going on? I'm not making fun. Their parents are so petrified of their kids getting caught up with the wrong crowd. They are so petrified. And on one hand, Latia Morris Ruach, Yitzchak Rivka, on one hand they're right, because Hashpah, especially in the young years, a terrible, terrible hashpa. I remember sitting with my friend at the beginning of fifth grade, and we decided that that year, I don't know what happened, but we decided we're not going to learn that year. My friend Neeson and I decided we're not going to learn a word this year. And the teacher was a shtickle on the old side. We took seats, prominent seats, in the back left of the room. And we were going to have tic-tac-toe contests. I remember it was fifth grade. And we decided we're set up for success. And I remember that was Hinni Mukhar Muzuman. Now, where did I get such an idea to do such a thing, to have that kavana at the beginning of the Muda Kodesh, at the beginning of the year? Where did that come from? And my friend Nissen, I like to think that he wasn't the mashpia. I was maybe also, maybe we just hit off together. The Rebbe must have been a brilliant Rebbe, okay? Because on the first day, he called, we said the first day, just learn the first hour to make sure we're on his good side. The first day we'll learn. So the first day he participated, and the Rebbe said, we have two boys here who I've never done this before. Takes out his paper, he cuts out a Torah, two Torahs, puts my name and the other kid's name, walks up, stands on a stepladder, and he puts our two names on the top in the classroom on the board. It's the Torah board. Ve'elu yamdu al habracha. And he and I got our first name. Well, we were so, wow, we got that. So, of course, we did the second day. I learned so much in fifth grade. Now, to this day, I don't know. Did the Rebbe chop what was going on? He was sitting in the back of the room and he got us on board? I don't know. By the time I realized, like, I totally didn't do what my plan was. That was my plan, and we never did it. Both of us learned all year. So that's the job of the Rebbe. You got to figure out which kids you have to chop. As soon as you see them going off, you have to chop them, not to criticize them. But, it could have been terrible. You know, I could have been terribly mushpa, and it's fifth grade. A kid goes off in fifth grade, he's like, who knows what happened in sixth grade. And if you think that a fifth grader doesn't know, I know. I remember knowing that I was planning to not learn that year. Why? I don't know. I have no idea why that happened. Sixth grade, the opposite happened. I went to learn, but I didn't. So I don't know what happened that year. I don't think the Rebbe spoke English. That was a terrible year. And my parents switched school, to the end of that yeshiva, went to another yeshiva. But and it was really, the hashpahs, they're so scared. Parents are so scared of it. And the job of the menalim in yeshivas is just never ending. It's like, you don't know where the left hook is coming from. So they're constantly worried about hashpah. That's why you see all these programs going on that you may not remember when you were in high school, because there needs to be so much more to counter everything going on, because there is no such thing as nothingness. Nothingness, but Ptolemy Vil de Zima, yeah.
If hashpah is like so bad, so it's not so hard for the Rebbeim to figure out which kids are like giving out the bad hashpah. Right?
Not so hard?
You usually tell.
Actually, you could tell, I don't know, I think it was very obvious in high school, but it's not, I feel like the Rebbeim knew. So I always wonder, what's the idea of, it sounds like very, heartless, but what's the idea of, keeping the kids that give the really bad hashpah in yeshiva?
Is that a struggle?
Who's going to make the kids bad hashpah?
I know in high school there were, kids that were held on for a lot, very long time, and a lot of them, it did help them a lot, but the mice that did hurt the class, and there was a lot of lack of growth.
Is that we're going to have two
I'll tell you one Maisa Shahaya that we had many, many years ago. It was a kid, Rabbi Ruben alluded to it. He spoke about it recently. What did he speak? He recently spoke. A Q&A, yeah. So we had a Maisa many years ago. It wasn't this story, but it was a different story, where there was a kid who was selling contraband. There's a recorder going on. So we're selling contraband, illegal substances. Okay. Stomach wine. But he was selling. And we found out about it. And our inclination was that he can't stay in the yeshiva. That's the first time we ever heard of such a thing. Yeah, wow, he can't stay. And we didn't want to bother the yeshiva. We'd get so harangued if we would ask the boy to leave, which we thought we'd ask him to leave, but it's considered standard before you ask a kid to leave, you have to ask a shayla. It's a big thing, a kid leaving, throwing a kid out of yeshiva in the middle of a year. Where's he going to go in the middle of, you know, January, February? It's a shtukah ritzicha, you have to ask a shayla, you know? So we decided we're going to call Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. So we called Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, and Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky said that years ago I would have told you that you have to send the kid out, terrible kilko, but nowadays once a kid is sent out and he's on the streets, he's lost forever. The boy's lost, and he'll go off the derech, and his future, he'll marry a Jewish girl, and he'll be lost forever. It's mamash ritzicha. So now I feel that you have to give him a second chance. So we looked at each other. We couldn't believe it. I can keep a kid like that. I did that. So we called Rav Shmuel back, and he said, you know, he stuck to his guns. So we just didn't. We thought for sure he would tell us to leave. We weren't really calling this a shayla. We didn't have a shayla. We just didn't want to take the achrayas. And Rav Shmuel said we had to keep him. So then we didn't know what to do. So then we decided to call the reshiva. Rabbi, what should we do? So we called the reshiva. So the reshiva said that dina nefashas and you need a bezdin. So you need a bezdin. You have to have three people on the bezdin. He said, I'm ready to be on the bezdin. And from the others, you have to try and get two more. And the ones to choose from are Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, the Novominska Rebbe, and Rav Aaron Schechter. Those were the Shiva's go-to Dayanim. So he said, okay. So we called Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. And
that's an object.
And we told Rav Shmuel what was going on, that, you know, like, we're so uncomfortable, so we want to put together like a, you know, what everyone holds. Rav Shmuel said, well, I told you to keep him, but only if he's remorseful. So we didn't hear that part. Only if he's remorseful. So Rabbi Lubin and I went and we spoke to the kid to see if he was remorseful. And the kid was, you know, you think it's not possible, but the kid was not remorseful. The kid said he doesn't think anything's wrong with it. He thinks everyone says it's addictive, but it's not. And he doesn't think he can't promise he would stop because there's nothing wrong with it.
There's no chashash,
you're
just like embarrassed.
So, I don't think chashash is embarrassed. Yeah, but even so, he still will do it, I know. So, hey, we call Rav Shmuel back. We said the kid's not remorseful. Because the kid's not remorseful, then you can't keep him. You have to throw him out. So then we said, okay, should we throw him out? We still need a bezdin? So we called Rav Shmuel back. So his Rebbe, Rav Shmuel says we shouldn't keep the kid because he's not remorseful. So should we do the bezdin? So the reshiva said, you don't need a bezdin. Rav Shmuel says, you should send him out. And it was all done through Rabbi Shimon Yishal. We weren't speaking to reshiva maybe one time, but it was mostly through with his secretary. So, okay, so we asked the kid to leave. The parents were very not happy. Very not happy, just macaculative, and so anyway, you get ruined and everything. And later, a couple months later, I bumped into Rabbi Yishal. And I said, okay, Shimon, what was going on over there? first of all, I'm in yeshiva for, you know, I was in Queens for 15 years. I was Roshiva's secretary. I'm here 10 years. I never ever heard of getting a bezdin. A bezdin? Mamish? A bezdin? A tribunal? I never heard of such a thing. A dentara? Where'd that come from? Says, let me tell you the backstory. The backstory was like this. When you called the Roshiva, first of all, the Roshiva was not happy that you didn't call him. You should have called him L'chatchila. So he was, I don't know what word he used, but he wasn't happy. I was angry, annoyed. Roshiva never used those words, but he wasn't happy that we didn't call him. And the Maisa, he held that the kid was Makako, and you can't keep him. But he didn't want to argue against Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, who already paskin that you should keep him. So therefore, he felt he needed machria. He holds, he threw him out. Rav Shmuel already said you should keep him. He needed a bezdin. He already knew what Rav Shmuel would say. He knew what he would say. He needed a third person on the bezdin to be machria. Once you called and told me that Rav Shmuel said you should come out, which is what I held. He needed a bezdin. He already had to. That's what was going on. So if you told me a situation like that was where a certain level of kilkul. But listen, it's kilkul of a kid talking about the movie he saw, you know, last night in the hallways or in the basement, you know, between, you know, Chazar Shatz. Yeah, all these things are kilkul, but I'm just saying, like, before we ask a kid to leave, like, it's shtickle, you need a bezdin. You know, it's ritzicha. So, you know, we have to be very careful. And who says, I heard this from a Reuven Feinstein at the Torah Masorah Convention. He said like this, you're not allowed to ask a kid, Derek Klaw, you're not allowed to kick a kid out of yeshiva. But Derek Klaw, that's why you have to ask a shayla, why? Because why kick him out of the yeshiva? Because he's not doing what he said he was going to do to live as a proper Talmud? But you thought he would be a proper Talmud. So maybe the reason why he's not performing properly is your fault. You didn't teach it properly. You didn't create the right environment. The Rebbe did not create the magic of Bon Chabala properly. You didn't create the learning programs well enough. You didn't figure out how to motivate that kid. You didn't sit down with others and say, how are we going to get all these kids excited and motivated? Meichitesi, it's the kid's fault. The kids
even
being.
If it's not the kid's fault.
Maybe it's your fault.
So let's say it's your fault.
So therefore, go do your job and fix it. Go fix
what
it. Don't,
you
want, you
want
no,
to
at this
fix
point,
it.
You can't you fix
want,
it. At this
oh,
point, he's
okay,
wrong.
All right. So
it's totally your
okay,
fault.
That's why you have this kashayla, because the gadol is going to figure out that you should try this, try this. We had a kid who was being Michal Shabbos. I remember years ago, Rabbi Aaron Feldman was there in Miami, you know, for Aguda, and we decided we're going to ask Rabbi Aaron Feldman what to do with this kid. It's been Michal Shabbos. So he said, how do you know he's Michal Shabbos? He says, he tells the kid what he does on Shabbos. So Rabbi Aaron Feldman says, a kid who says he's being Michal Shabbos, first of all, is in the Mesa Matzah Russia. I said, does Rashi want to meet him? it's very believable. So he said, no, if a kid says he's ain't other Mesa Matzah Russia, so he really not to be Makabal that. And even if he says he's been Machal Shabbos, but if he's not doing a Papahesia, it's a different din, and you shouldn't throw him out.
If he is, you should throw him out. If you see him,
he said that if he's not, you shouldn't throw him out. The diak is fine, but I would ask the shayla again. But it sounds like a good diak. So the next year I told him he's not doing better, don't hold him out. And then I made a deal with the kid that if he leaves after 11th grade, we won't throw him out. No, I didn't say that. We won't throw him out, and he did. And he went to Eretz Yisrael. He learned in Eretz Yisrael for 15 years. He's a Rebbe somewhere now. Okay, Sfaradim. It's like one of the most amazing stories. Okay, there was another Talmud with a father. You know, we couldn't stay. I want them to leave. You know, in the middle of 11th grade, And the father said to me, "Hey, Pa, I'm going to make a deal with you. If you don't throw my son out, I know he deserves to be thrown out. If you don't throw him out, I give you my word, he will not come back here next year. He will not come back. So please don't throw him out. He'll never overcome the bizayon. He'll be angry. He was already angry, but he'll be more angry." So I said, okay. Yeah, I'm a trusting person. So I said, okay, we won't throw him out. So B'kai Chava, he was leaving. He's trying to figure out what he's going to do next year. So he got tight with one of the base manager guys. So one of the base manager guys came to me and said, what should I tell him to do? So I said, okay, maybe ask him if he wants to go on a kibbutz. I don't know. Like, no shaykes. So I said, okay, I can say, don't say that to him. What you tell him, it depends what he wants. Tell me what you want. If you're looking for a top tier yeshiva, he should go to CCJ or Tomo. That's what I told him. If he wants to go to a second tier place, I give him two or three places. If he wants to go to a third tier place, you go to this place. And if he wants to go to a fourth tier place, there's some fourth tier places.
Where's
also.
Just come in?
That was high school. Oh. Okay, this is base manage. So he wants somebody to go for base manage. So the base manager comes back to me, and he said, okay, he wants to go to a top-tier place. I said, okay. So let him apply to CCJ or Tomo. He goes, he's not going to Tomo. He's applied to CCJ. Okay, so yeah, let him apply to CCJ. Okay. So Reb David Chait at the time was running CCJ, and he called me, and I told Reb David Chait, okay, here's the story. I told him the whole story, and then that was the end. Then I heard that in August, I saw the father. I said, you know, where's he going next year? He says, he's going to CCJ. I said, he is? He said, yeah. I said, okay. Then, 2 weeks later, I get a call from Rav David Chait. Rav David Chait, Rav Pavan, you have to help me out. This boy thinks he's coming to CCJ. The office in Queens sent him an acceptance letter. He's supposed to send him a reject letter in February. I just found out about it now that he's planning on coming. And since you know the boy so well and the parents so well, would you be able to tell them that he wasn't accepted? I said, Chait, you know I love you from way, way back. I would do anything for you, but no. And Rav David Chait couldn't do it either.
So he went?
The boy went to CCJ. He was there for 2 years. Then he switched to another branch for 4 years. He became, he's not Rebbe, but he became a very chashuv ben Torah.
Which branch is
it? Ask me privately.
You stay in a branch for 6 years. When does Queens come in?
He didn't go to Queens.
He's in a branch for 6 years.
So this is just remarkable. He got accepted. He got accepted by mistake, but he never found out it was a mistake. So he lived. He lived to the code. He lived by the code at the yeshiva, and kept three siddurim. I still meet guys who tell me that they're still so close with him. He's a real ben Torah. His kids are he's bringing them up. I'll be Taras HaKodesh. It's just an amazing story.
Does he know the story?
He never told
him.
Maybe his father told him, but
I didn't know.
When would he be old enough for me to tell him? I don't know. I was the parent to telling him, I don't know.
If the right thing is to throw him out, maybe he could keep it longer.
I don't know. He didn't belong there, but you know, but based on, but they say he acted properly.
No, I'm saying if he's being a kavel, so maybe TC, you could accept the deal to keep him for the rest of the year.
I don't think I accepted the deal. No, I don't think that was a deal. The deal was he was not going to come back next year. It's come out never. We got the guy, this one kid with the selling drugs that we did curtail it immediately. Mm-hmm. Well, even now we would do things differently. Now what we would do is we wouldn't kick a kid out. We'd tell the kid, listen, based on what's happening now, you can't be here. But if you get help, and there's someone who is credible in the field of the area where you're having a challenge, will call us and tell us that you are no longer have that same level of challenge, you're not different than anyone else. Doesn't mean you don't know Yetzirah, but you're not different than anyone else, then okay, you make amends and you can come back. A little more forgiving, it's a little bit more of a, you know, we don't have to throw them out. Go work on it. Some kids working on it still, it's already 2 years, they're working on it, waiting to come back. But it's a different mindset. I'm not throwing you out. When you're ready to come back, you can come back. So we've seen kids, when they get thrown out, they get very angry. You know, they get very, very angry. So and that anger is it end up causing a tremendous kilkel also. So, you know, you have to be careful, though. Yeah, these are hard shailos, very hard. That's why you have to ask a shaila. We ask shailos. You know, we also, we try not to paskin ourselves on kicking it out, because, you know, the yeshivas, it's a little bit, you don't want your yeshiva to be the dumping ground, so you become a little bit, you're a little bit nogeh b'davar also. So, yeah, we have to try and be above that. That's why we're not manalim. I mean, one of the main reasons why it wasn't good to be manal is because it became a conflict of interest. You know, like you need someone who's not nogeh to be able to see things. There's a problem with something, you could say, okay, we have to fix this. So you're the manal, you say, wait, what's wrong with it? It looks perfect to me. You know, so that's, so what do you say? Any other questions? I got a lot of stuff here. On the kilkel factor, yeah, it's very hard. How do you deal with kids who are kilkel? But the job of the Rebbe is try and make sure that there isn't kilkel. How do you do that? It's very hard.
But the yeshiva try to accept guys that, like, aren't going to call us kilkel on purpose? Like really not going to call, like...
What for which age are you talking about?
When they're taking guys in ninth grade.
First grade?
Whatever,
ninth grade.
Into whatever it is, into the system.
Well, it makes a difference. Which one?
What's an afternoon?
Ninth grade.
Ninth grade, yes.
What's an afternoon?
Mishum Sliya, Mishum Shiusa.
Either way, you said it would be Metal to someone else. Fater. First grade, meaning Rebbe said you're
more. There's a difference between first grade and ninth grade.
Rebbe said you're more selective in first grade. Because of the shmooze.
I didn't say that. I didn't say
Pashup
that.
Shah, because at 3 years old.
You didn't say that.
That's part of what Rebbe said, no?
No, I didn't say that. I said that in first grade, we're more looking at the parents. In first grade, we're more interviewing the parents to see what type of homes they have. You know, so. Unfortunately, nowadays there are so many different trends going on that are really, you know, that I don't think the parents realize it's a kilkel, but we would not approve of parents on Shabbos playing organized sports inside an Erev, a part of a basketball league. Is it Usser? And which Isser are you going to tell them they're being over? I don't know. I'm not opposed to it, but that's not the point. That they, it means they're not holding by where. Where you are.
Sports on Shabbos? By the parents?
Parents are playing organized sports.
Huh?
What?
There are certain communities that there are people, adults, on Shabbos. It's one of the Kisronos of Erevin. In the Erev world,
everything's mutter.
Everything's mutter. One guy was telling me that sitting inside a pool, sitting in a pool is not really usher, because if you're not swimming and it's hot, it's Miami and you're hot, and you just you know, just cooling yourself off. I know what you're saying. It's gonna be a hole. Huh?
I think his father.
Yeah, that was a lie. People have a lot of, you know. So yeah, so it's an Erev. It probably started off with in the backyard. You know, they're shooting around a basket. Usher on Shabbos? I don't know if it's Usher on Shabbos. Shoot a bell and basket. Not Usher on Shabbos. But I remember when I got my pool table here, so I decided that I'm going to cover it for Shabbos. Because, I don't know where. This is a slippery slope. I had this whole machlokas with my Shabbos with my guys. 12th graders. So at one in the morning, I had this like hour fight with them on what's wrong with Hard Rock. Okay. So one guy was upset at me. He said, Rebbe, how could you speak a bit against it? You were never there. So I said, you know, that's a good time. So tell me. what goes on in Hot Rock? He goes, I don't know, I was never there. He was never there. I said, so you get to say it's good even though you were never there, and I can't say it was bad even though I was never there. So, you know, I was telling them that the basic issue is that you don't want to make your red lines right up against the glass, where if you mess up and you go on the other side of that glass, you are down off the cliff. Your red line has to be much further away. Like the concept of Susi Aglatar, that's the Mashal HaGeg. Even at Hard Rock, there's that, you know, that door that you're not allowed to go into because you're not 21? Yeah? So that door, you wouldn't go in that door. He goes, no, I never go in that door. They won't even let me go in that door. I'm 17. I can't go in that door. I said, nah, right. But if you know someone that's going to take you into that door, it's bad. Lukuliyama. So you don't belong in a place like that. So that's why. And yeah, you have to figure out everything else based on, we had an English principal here before Rabbi Levine, before Mr. Scharf, the three English principals ago. So, and he used to tell me like this, he says, you don't realize how lucky you are, right, Balgan? I said, and he was Jewish, but not religious. He said, you do everything based on Shulchan Aruch. He knew a little bit from me. And you know which order to cut your fingernails. It says, everything I do, I have to decide on my own, is it morally correct or not. I get to do anything I want, and I want to live properly. I don't have a proper moral, ethical life. And I have to decide on my own, is it moral or is it ethical? And it's very, there's a lot of rationalizations, and it's very hard for people that don't have a Shulchan Aruch, everything is open to them. So what's okay, what's not okay? You know, like I was telling my guys that I think Mike Pence made a Kiddush Hashem because he announced publicly that he would not eat in a restaurant table for two with another female that wasn't his wife. That's amazing. The world of immorality for him to say that was amazing. You know, so like, did I answer your question? I didn't forget what your question was. What was it? Yeah.
How does the Kilkel Sora stem with them sometimes turning a blind eye to things? Mm-hmm. Pretending they don't see it. But once you see it, you have to respond to it. They'd rather not respond to it.
I think most of Chinuch is figuring out which things you should notice and which things you shouldn't
which
notice.
Which things shouldn't you notice?
If the kid's going to be embarrassed that you noticed because it's public, so it would be better if you didn't notice and you could speak to him privately, that would be better.
Even privately?
But everything should be addressed privately?
If you could.
Even privately. Arabam will specifically pretend that they don't know that the kid has a phone because, I don't know what the stories are, because for some reason it's better to speak privately. Most
of them who make they don't know don't want to deal with the confrontation.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if necessarily they hold it's the right thing to not notice. They take the path of least resistance. They just don't want to deal with the confrontation. That's why they make principles, because they're the mean people who do all these terrible things. But my brother told me one of the most embarrassing stories. He'd probably be very upset at me for saying it. So, being that's recorded, I'll tell it. But he took away a kid's phone, and the parent knocked on his door, crazy hour, like 11 o'clock at night, saying, excuse me, but my son needs his phone, and or 10:45 at night, and I demand that you give him his phone now. You have no right to keep it. So my brother said, like, I'm really sorry, but let him come to me in yeshiva. I have it in yeshiva, I'll deal with him in yeshiva. So the father said, well, I have a GPS. My brother didn't know about this at the time, but I have a GPS tracker, and it says that it's at this address. Ouch. That was the worst. at the worst. So he had to give him the phone. Confrontation, people think that it's easy. Not easy to be confrontational. And it's not easy to resist the confrontation. Nobody wants to be confrontational. That's that. I think with the phones, it's very hard to deal with that. Yeah, we're in a relationship, but, you know, there's another concept called that vulnerability breeds trust. So when you take away a kid's phone, you also, the kid now trusts you because you risk the relationship by doing what you said you were going to do.
No, but sometimes if you take it away, they'll just add another one. What's the matter?
Yeah. There's a matter. It's not easy to get another one.
It is.
Yeah.
If you have $20 and you somehow have a way to get to Walmart, then
yeah, it's
not. Yeah, for a high school kid.
Yeah.
$20.
$20.
$16. $16.27.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Why?
Because I don't have to take away a kid's phone. A 12th grader, you get $20, you can get to Walmart.
Rebbe, till now, t-